We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome to the Guilty as Charged podcast. My name is Steven, and I'm the host, as always. Joining me is my guy, Tyler. Tyler, what's up, man? How are you doing tonight?
Doing well, man. We have got 2 weeks until the NFL draft, and I am excited. I'm doing well. I am admittedly crawling to 150, but thankfully there's players like Blake Fisher that you were going to talk about tonight that I watched, and it's like, yes, good things.
Yeah. There's, the good thing about coming to the draft process late is that allows for caddies to get all of the prospects in. So I appreciate caddies cut ups. If you like watching all 22 tape, that's really the only resource that is available for college film, unfortunately, which never has made any sense to me. But yeah, man, 2 weeks to go, which is crazy, you know, that this is coming. You know, I keep on thinking that like, oh, like we have all this time, and then like, no, like it's in 2 weeks from now. So it's an early draft this year, but a lot of fun. So some housekeeping items for you guys. We are going to be going live this Saturday. We have an episode planned for the Saturday, and then we'll do a Q&A. And then we'll be going live the Saturday before the draft as well to do kind of a final draft Q&A. We'll have some final thoughts and stuff like that ahead of the draft. So that would be April 20th, I believe. So yeah, a couple live Saturdays here before the home stretch of the NFL draft. So really excited about that. Tonight's show is our favorite 2024 NFL draft prospects. It was really hard to narrow down the list. And both of us tried to come up with some names that we haven't had a ton of chances to talk about. And we'll get into some of those reasons why. But we've talked about so many different prospects. We've tried to cover so many different scenarios. This is not necessarily Chargers fits, although we can mention that, but this is just purely guys that we love to watch. And I think maybe a little underrated as well, based off the consensus board. So I think that does play a part into it, but I'm excited to dive into this episode with Tyler tonight.
Yeah, it does feel like some of these guys are underrated. And when you find a guy, whether he's 40 spots, 30 spots, 100 spots, further down than maybe you would have expected, like you start to take, like you are like rooting for that player even more, because almost like you take part in their journey for some reason, like you're rooting for them to outplay the expectations. So my guys is awesome. Definitely doesn't mean they're the best players by any means. It's a favorites thing for me. It's really the guys that, you know, you watch 10 prospects and the first eight of them are not great. And the second, you know, the ninth one's like, all right. And then there's that prospect that just stands out. For whatever reason, he's maybe lower on the board, or maybe he's right where he should be, but he makes you like want to watch the next 10 to find that next guy. My guys are guys that just, you know, they do the football very well. But I think they surprise you. They're definitely the surprises based on where they're ranked.
Yeah, and I think also it's important to point out, like, we pride ourselves on checking a lot of boxes off, right? And so we will talk about some data points for some of these guys too. So we've tried to cover our bases as much as we can regarding these different players, and I'm excited to get into it. Real quickly about the Chargers hosting a draft party. They are doing that this year. It's more of a pub crawl from what I gathered from the social media release. So if that is your boat, you can definitely partake in that. I know people really love the draft parties every single year. We are going to be streaming. I know a lot of the other Chargers content creators are going to be streaming. I know Die Hard Bolt Club is doing a draft party as well. So lots of different ways to consume the draft. However, you guys wish, obviously, whoever is listening to this, we hope you will join us on draft weekend, and we'll be live all 3 days as we always are to get into everything. So we'll have some great discussions. It's going to be Tyler and I for the most of the first day. And then some of the other guys associated with the Guilty as Charged podcast will be jumping on later in the evening as well. So it should be a ton of fun. Hopefully you guys can tune in.
Yeah, it's the best time of the year. Day one's great, obviously, but then getting to day two, getting to day three, and the marathon that it becomes, we get tired. I order pizza. I try to stay awake. I chug, you know, some sort of soda or something to stay awake. Yeah. But it's fun. And I think this year, more than any other year, like, please watch the day three stream with us, because we'll talk about some day three players today. Like, we've done a lot of work. Watch these guys. When the name is called, hopefully we know who they are.
Yeah.
And odds are at this point, we actually might. Like, we've done a lot of work this year.
Yeah, certainly more day three guys than usual. You know, and I think, you know, the one thing that's great about the draft is just like talking to other people about like players you like. You know, Thomas Martinez and I have been messaging about stuff for the last 2 years about draft prospects. And, you know, I messaged him randomly 1 week and a couple of weeks ago, and I was like, hey, do you have any fullbacks for me? Like, it's just that kind of stuff, you know. And obviously we've been able to, you know, interview like Trevor Sikkema, you know, a bunch this year. We've had other draft analysts on. So it's just awesome. The next time the draft is out west, I'll probably go, because we went to Vegas and it was just like, it was so much fun being out there. Getting to Detroit is a little difficult for me, so didn't even consider it here. But hopefully we can get it out west here in the future.
Yeah, the Vegas one was awesome. I'd say that the picks were a bit underwhelming. Loved Zion, obviously. Then they didn't have a pick. Then it was JT Woods. Then it was Isaiah Spiller, Otito. Like, all respect to those guys, but it wasn't like, woohoo! Yeah. Wasn't a super...
And then they took Jamari, and it was awesome. Like, we were
on the couch.
We were in Vegas, and we went like to watch the first 2 days with people. We went the first day to like the actual draft site, mm-hmm. and then the second day we went to where the Chargers had their like local watch party. And then the third day we're like, well, like, let's just maybe hang out at Tyler's aunt and uncle's house. And then, like Tyler said, the first two picks were so boring. When they picked Jamari Sawyer, the three of us, Arjun was there, the three of us literally like shot off the couch, and we were like, yeah, let's fucking go.
It was awesome. It was awesome. And I hope we get that this year too. Whoever it is, I hope we get that. I think we will.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All right. So tonight's show is, as always, presented by Prize Picks. Of course, it is the best and easiest way to consume daily fantasy sports. I've been using it this week for Masters predictions as well. So they do have golf on there. So it is a great way to get some skin in the game, and we love using it. You can go to prizepicks.com/guilty. Code GUILTY for a deposit match up to $100. It helps support the show, helps support your wallet if you're good at it. And it certainly is easy to win money on there as well. So again, prizepicks.com/guilty, code GUILTY at checkout. All right, Tyler, let's get into our My Guys here. We do have a slideshow. We've been seeing the comments that you guys like having slideshows, so we're doing more slideshows lately. So it should be a ton of fun tonight. All right, my first one here. I did try and mix it up for our main like six. So Tyler and I each chose three offense, three defense. I wanted to do a first rounder, and for me, that is Tarrion Arnold. There are players who I've graded higher, like a Brock Bowers, things like that. But part of like who becomes my favorite guys are also kind of just like positions that I don't love, and then they stand out. Like watching cornerback tape honestly can make my eyes bleed at certain times. Like, you know, if the cornerback's not getting targeted, if they don't, you know, tackle and play the run, it just can be a really tough watch. Like, his teammate, Terry Arnold's teammate, Kool-Aid McKinstry, was a tough watch for me because nobody threw his way. He makes business decisions. He never plays the run. It was a tough watch. Terry Arnold was the opposite of that. He plays the position with such a high motor, such a tenacious mentality, and he's just a clean, smooth athlete. I know he didn't necessarily run super fast, but I've been reading as many things as possible on The Beast. And apparently Nate Oates, the Alabama basketball coach, approached Terrion Arnold last year and asked him to join the basketball team. So yeah, he didn't run a super fast 40, but this is a special athlete all around, and he's great in short area drills as well. And I do think that really shows up. Now, some people have kind of pointed out he was better in 2023 than 2022. I do think part of that is that he was playing the slot a little bit more. And I think particularly as a run defender, that's where that shows up. But overall, I just love his mentality. I love how smooth of an athlete he is. His film, when he's given the chance to be physical with wide receivers, is so, so, so good. We both really like Ladd McConkey, the Georgia receiver. Terrion Arnold is the only cornerback who gave him problems, and it's because Terrion Arnold was allowed to get up and be physical with him. He's great with that. The ball production is fantastic. Over the last two seasons, he has 26 pass breakups and 6 interceptions. He's the only corner to meet those numbers. He's also the only corner in this class to be in the top, that's supposed to say top 10, in coverage grade and run defense grade, according to PFF. So he's very well-rounded. He was a former safety, and I think that shows up for him to play the run. It was just a ton of fun because he was always around the football, and I just loved watching him play. So Terrion Arnold for me was my first round my guy because he brought like a ton of joy to the position, and it's a position that it can get very difficult to watch.
It can get so difficult. I mean, if you're watching it like we do, you get 30 to 40 minute games where you sit there for 30 to 40 minutes, yeah, and maybe there's one target. And you're like praying maybe they throw some screens so they can get some tackles in there. And corner film, not only is it boring, it can go south for me very quickly. Like if you watch, yeah, I think for both of us, our favorite corners, if they don't tackle, if they don't play the run, if they don't try to come up on screens, we don't like them as much. And maybe they don't have a higher ceiling. Arnold maybe doesn't have a higher ceiling than a Quinyon Mitchell, but Arnold will play the run and he will come up and hit people. Yeah. And it was such a joy to watch him. And I'll switch to my other guy because they're kind of the same sort of territory here. Guys that didn't test well, guys with maybe not the fastest, twitchiest guys, but Kamari Lassiter, the corner from Georgia, just a ball of fun to watch. Just an aggressive downhill tackler. There's two back-to-back plays against South Carolina, one where he makes a huge hit on the receiver, and then you see him just like smacking his head and going crazy. Then the literal next play, there's a screen and he destroys that player and he's smacking his head again. Like, that is what I want to see out of a corner. Don't hit your head too many times, maybe, but it was just so much fun watching him. Only 136 yards allowed, no touchdowns allowed in 2023. Number one in snaps per reception, number three in forced incompletion rate. So not only do we like guys that are fun to watch, but they're fun to watch, you know, because they can play downhill and make tackles, but they're also good in forced incompletion rate. When the ball is thrown to them, maybe it's once a game, maybe it's never, but when it is thrown to them, they make a play on the football. So Arnold, Lassiter, loved watching these two guys. Those two corners were a ton of fun.
Yeah, and regarding Lassiter in particular, Dane Brugler did say that most teams view him as a slot corner. That doesn't mean you think less of him because no. He is such a good tackler, and I think he can match up well against tight ends because of his size and physicality. So it is just something to keep in mind. I think that's the difference between him and a guy like Akili Ringo, who was a bit slower as well at Georgia. It's so crazy to me that like Georgia has all these freaks and then somehow they end up with all these 4-6 corners. It doesn't make sense to my brain. Uh-huh. But Lassiter can play in the slot as well. So we've mocked him to the Chargers a couple of times. I think he can play outside. You obviously don't want him to line up against, you know, a Tyreek Hill or that kind of profile, although really does it matter what kind of corner is against Tyreek Hill at this point. So, you know, if you draft him and he plays the slot, like, so be it. I think the slot is basically a starting position these days in the NFL anyway. And especially for the Chargers, who are probably going to be living in nickel personnel the entire time. So Lassiter is a ton of fun to watch. I think he does enough to overcompensate for the lack of speed. And if he's a slot corner, then so be it. He's a big slot corner. He can play the run, he can blitz, he can tackle, he can cover tight ends. So I would still be a big fan of his, even if he is only a slot corner.
Yeah, me as well. In a vacuum, I like him. If you're just comparing slot to slot, I like him more than Mike Sanristol overall. I have him higher on my board, and I would take him for most teams over Sanristol, but for the Chargers, I would get why they go with Mike.
Yeah, for sure. All right, next here, Jalen Polk is my favorite wide receiver in this class to watch. He has elite film off the line and at the catch point, in my opinion. This is a guy who is going to he does have a little Mike Williams to his game in terms of the jump ball, where he's just going to throw his body on the line and not really care about how he lands. So I think that's a positive in this case, because it does show up all over the tape, and it's not just boundary tapes. Like, there's a rep against Michigan State where he runs a post route and Michael Penix underthrows him by like 4 or 5 yards. And Jalen Polk just goes up and bodies the corner, takes a shot from a safety, comes down with the play. He is a fearless player. He is not afraid to get hit. And then he's also, in my opinion, the best blocking wide receiver in this class. He is the dirty work guy of dirty work guys. And for, like, specifically for the Chargers, I think he would probably be like the closest player to Anquan Boldin that you could find in this class or on the roster. Just that physical presence, guy that's going to do anything he possibly can to impact the team. And he does have real route and positional versatility for me. He ran 58% of his routes out wide and 42% in the slot. So that plays really well with a Josh Palmer. So the two of them could go back and forth while Quentin Johnson is your Z kind of deal. So I think his fit for the Chargers would be really clean. I completely understand that I am higher on him than most. His consensus ranking is 62. I have him as wide receiver 5. I think Dane Brugler had him as like wide receiver 12. So I understand that. I just think his film is super clean. I love the toughness. I love the physicality. He doesn't have a ton of juice after the catch, but neither does Romo Dunze, and I don't think that's particularly a problem. And Jalen Polk, for what it's worth, had the same amount of missed tackles forced as Odunze, with 23 fewer catches, 23 fewer opportunities. So I love watching Jalen Polk play. I think he just embodies the physical, tough route runner type of receiver. Obviously, we are fans of the Chargers. Keenan Allen has played a major role in like how I look at wide receivers. Not to say that Jalen Polk is Keenan Allen, but it's just that type of receiver is the kind of receiver that I gravitate towards. And if you look at my big board later on, you'll see kind of the other guys who are in that same kind of vein.
Yeah, I agree. I am a little surprised he's as far down as he is for some people. Now, it's a stacked class, and we're talking about Polk last year, whole different ranking. Maybe he's wide receiver 3 or something for most people. Yeah. I don't know. But he is a ball of fun to watch. And he's actually, I just watched Bootleg's episode with Mina Kimes, and the first name she mentioned as a my guy was Jalen Polk. So you are in some good company there. If Mina Kimes likes Polk, then I think it's probably a decent player. So yeah, Polk was a ton of fun to watch. I think he's my wide receiver 6 or 5. So either we're dead on same, or I'm pretty close. He's awesome. Polk was a lot of fun to watch again. We've talked about Kyrie Jackson a ton. The route, the touchdown against Kyrie Jackson was beautiful. There's also a certain way that he attacks the football, the way he plucks the football. It's different. Some guys wait for the football to come to them. They try to catch it. And maybe there's an aspect of late hands to that too. But sometimes you need to get your hands up and catch the football and get it over the defender. That's Polk. So him, Odunze, it's kind of sick that was your 1-2. These two guys that could just go up and get the football. Outstanding. Really good my guy. Love him. Completely different body type here is Anthony Gold, the wide receiver from Oregon State, who's 240th on the consensus board, yet he's top 90 for me. Now, granted, I don't have all 250 players on the consensus board ranked, but still, I do believe he's a lot better than he's being projected on the consensus board. To me, he's Calvin Austin in 2024, because he's another undersized guy who's, you know, not the tallest, not the biggest, whatever, but he played most of his snaps outside. And I saw Anthony's own tweet about, you know, everyone thinks I'm a gadget guy, everyone thinks I'm just a special teams kind of guy. And he says, like, but I'm not that. I'm so much more than that. And you watch the film, and he's playing outside, and he's having to win versus man and against press and to get open. And it's like, oh, okay, so this guy's actually playing outside. And then he can also do that gadget stuff. So he runs the 4.39 40. Like, yeah, sure, he'll win outside. And then they'll throw him a screen, and takes it 75 yards to the house. So I just love a player later on who just plays bigger than, you know, who they are physically, plays tough. Like, I loved Calvin Austin. I think Calvin Austin went in like the fourth round, maybe fifth round, if I'm not mistaken. Gold projected at 240. I think it feels way too late. I think that Austin's a better overall receiver, but I don't think Gold's all that far behind. I really like Gold.
Yeah, and then like you mentioned on here, high-end punt returner, kick returner option. If the Chargers needed a returner, then I think Anthony Gold would be much higher on my list as well. So a ton of fun. I think, you know, in terms of body type, he is pretty similar to Darius Davis. But this is like if Darius Davis could run routes at a really
That's
high
how
level.
I'm feeling. Yeah. I agree.
So I haven't graded him per se, but I've watched him in passing, and he's always making plays for the Beavers. So
Really good. Big surprise.
I debated about adding Junior Colson to this list because we've talked a lot about him, but I want to give him his proper due because we, at least for me, I feel like we're almost guilty of it. It's like, well, he's the Michigan guy, so like it's just an easy selection. But I want to talk about like why he is my linebacker one. So for me, you know, he's my 34th ranked player overall. He's 54 consensus. So it's not like he is being drastically underrated. This linebacker class is not fun to watch. I've still somehow graded 10 of them. I just keep waiting for that fourth guy to like, you know, throw his name in there, but we'll see what happens. But so I wanted to talk about Junior Colson in this way because it's not just that there's a Michigan connection here. I think the film is legitimately like really, really, really good. And people, at least within the fan base, are kind of underrating him. I've seen some other fan bases talk about like taking him at like pick number 52. One of my Rams people that I follow was talking about that today. Some other fan bases want him in the 40s. So this is a guy that, for me, if the Chargers want him, are going to have to take him at pick number 37 or maybe do like a slight trade down. I would be shocked if he ends up going at, you know, in the third round. I think in this particular linebacker class where there's so many like small space and chase linebackers who can cover, can blitz, can do fun things, this is the only three down linebacker to me in this class. And I think you see that in the grades. Obviously PFF grades are subjective. He's one of two linebackers in this class to rank in the top 15 run defense and coverage grades. Adrian Cooper is the other one. He did a ton of quarterback spying, so I don't really buy that at all. But this is a guy who just plays with such a toughness and physicality that really is unmatched in this class. I tweeted this yesterday, but he had a quote that Dane Brugler cited because he finished the season with clubs on both of his hands. And he basically was like, if I can walk, I'm going to play. Like, he just does not miss games. Any opportunity he had to start, he started and finished that game. So there's just a ton of physicality, a ton of reliability, durability to this player. To me, he exemplifies the Ted thing, the Ted mantra that is in the Chargers weight room. And you can see his brain working so many different ways because he is always anticipating angles, anticipating routes, making plays on the football. You know, he can read a pulling guard before that guy even comes across the formation. He's not afraid to take that guard up head on, stack and shed, make a tackle on the play. I do have some athletic concerns here, which is why he's not like a first round player, but that's it, man. Like, I think he checks every possible box that any team would want in a modern linebacker because he is just, he is what the NFL needs right now. Like, we did the small linebacker thing, and now the NFL is pivoting back towards run defense, and Junior Colson is here to say, I can stop the run, I can cover tight ends, I can play match zone. This is a guy who can do everything very well. So, yeah, there's the Michigan connection, but I think independent of that, he is my linebacker one because his film is just so much fun to watch with his physicality and his tenacious mentality that he plays with.
Yeah, I don't hate myself as much as you, so I've only watched five linebackers, but Junior Colson is also my linebacker one. Not that there was a big crowd to pull from there, but he is, and it was pretty evident early on, I think the most cerebral linebacker in this class, and including last class as well, I think.
Yeah,
it's so frustrating to watch a lot of these linebackers. Maybe they're downhill run blitzer types, or like, you know, they just pass rush, and that's kind of all that they do. Looks really cool on film, right? or maybe they're a converted safety, maybe they're undersized and they're just really good in coverage or something. Colson not only can do all of that, he can really think through all of it. And that's why, you know, the more you watch the Michigan defense and more you watch guys like Junior Colson, you realize, boy, the Chargers have something awesome here in Jesse Minter, because it's not just a good scheme. Like, these players are connected. And I don't know if it starts with Junior Colson necessarily, but he was a huge part of it for them. And after, I think, two games of watching him, I tweeted out months ago, I don't know if there's another player in this class that covers more ground or had to cover more ground for the defense than Junior Colson. Maybe like a DB, sure. But, you know, linebackers, like what he was able to do, I mean, east, west, north, south, you name it, he's able to get to every point in the field. I mean, Minter had him like line up on one side of the field and cover the other side of the field to completely confuse how things were going on defense. I mean, what they asked him to do, I mean, screw the athletic concerns. Like, I watched him just drop in coverage to the opposite hash diagonally, to, and then the quarterback's going, what the hell is happening? Because his linebacker's getting the other direction. So awesome watching him. Linebacker one. Yes, Peyton Wilson, as Jorge points out, like, super athletic. Awesome. Probably the highest ceiling. In fact, he has the highest ceiling. Like, there's no doubt about that. A lot of injury concerns there. But yeah, no. Junior Colson was awesome. I would have put him if you didn't, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah. Regarding Peyton Wilson, I think the film is really good. Like, he does match Junior in terms of film, in terms of athleticism. But in the beast, these are the injuries that he has, Dane Brugler, meaning tracked for Peyton Wilson. So he tore his ACL as a senior in high school. That required surgery, and then he re-injured that at practice or in rehab. So he missed his entire freshman season, redshirted. In as his redshirt freshman season, he missed two games with a shoulder injury and a concussion. His next season, he missed the final 10 games with shoulder surgery. The next season, he missed two games with a shoulder slash stinger slash concussion. And then this past season, he had another shoulder injury. So this is a guy that has had three season-ending injuries over the course of his career. It's just like this is very reminiscent of Leighton Vander Esch's career, and Leighton Vander Esch just retired after like 5 years in the NFL. So it's just a concern, man. Like, Peyton Wilson is probably rangier, probably faster than Junior Colson, but that medical profile scares the hell out of me. And this is just what we know about. Like, this is the thing that's things that are on the record. Like, he could have played through other things that we don't know about. So it's just, you know, Junior Colson has zero season ending injuries on his history. He's also 22. Peyton Wilson is going to be 25 as a rookie. So it's just stuff like that really helps swing things towards Junior Colson.
Yeah, I agree there. Linebacker one for me, at least over Peyton Wilson. Have to get to Cooper. I know I got to get to Cooper, but yeah, Colson will be tough to displace him, because I think you and I are on the same page with Colson.
Yeah.
The next guy, I believe we're on similar pages, because I had watched Jerrion Jones, the corner from Florida State, loved him. And then either like a day or two later, I know Steven got to him because he messaged me. Jerrion rocks is what he messaged me. And I'm like, yeah, he fucking does. Like, he is a ton of fun to watch. And again, it's one of those players you're just going through. You're trying to find some of these guys that are projected, you know, day three of like, who's this guy in the 144th spot? All right, let's give him a watch. And you watch him and, you know, play a screen, boom, hits that guy. Interception to seal the game against Miami. He's so instinctive. He's so good. And whereas you might have a concern with some of the athletic profiles of, let's say, Kamar Lassiter in the slot, Jerrion Jones is one of the most athletic corners of all time in terms of his RAS, which makes it even more fun. So you've got a guy who's very good, great film, and he runs that 4.39. He's a 98th percentile RAS guy. So one of the most athletic corners in NFL history. Again, at 144, I don't quite get it, but it is what it is. This is why these guys are my guys. So again, like Arnold, like Lassiter, love guys that tackle. Love guys that force incompletions, get their hands on the football. That's definitely Jones. A lot of energy with him. I know, by the way, he's allowed less than 300 yards in the last two seasons combined. So, like, again, why 144th? I don't know. Someone will have to explain to me why he's that far down. Not that I think he's a top 30 player, but I do have him at 59th right now. And I would take him as early as the third round if the Chargers wanted to go that route.
Yeah, I think when you watch this is another one where the high IQ stands out immediately. Like, Florida State does a lot of, you know, too high shell coverages. So there's a lot of matching routes and things like that. And you'll watch Jerrion Jones on his side and whoever he has to match with, whether that's the safety or the other corner, they're always like a little bit more hesitant. And Jerrion's just like, fuck that, I'm going for it. And he always gets it right. Like there was a rep against Clemson where they kind of did, I want to say it was a dagger route. And the guy who was supposed to carry vertical was late. So Jerrion covered the vertical corner route and beat the guy to the spot, pass breakup on third down. Punt team comes out. So it's just, this is a guy who his high IQ is all over the place. These Florida State DBs, I don't know what it is, but every 4 years, awesome. There's just one that's awesome. This year, there's two really good ones. So not just like the consensus board ranking, like I think people are hyping up the wrong Florida State cornerback. I think Jerrion Jones' tape is better than Renardo Green's tape. Mm. He's a better athlete than Renardo Green is. And so it just is a little confusing to me, the lack of usage at Florida State. Maybe that's it, that he was never really like a starter outside for them. He was always like their slot guy. So I like Jones a lot. I think his film is great. The RAS is great. The numbers are great. He'll play the run. So like you said, if the Chargers wanted to take him in the third round, I'd be stoked with that. He's not small either. Kevin Kernick asking about that, if he's small. I think he's 5'11".
He's like average.
He's actually taller than Renardo Green. I was looking at that the other day. So it's an interesting one. So I really like Jerrion Jones, and I'm glad that you chose to put him on here.
Yeah, so much fun. I agree with you. So I had to double check where I had Renardo Green. Yeah, I have Renardo Green, not too much further off, but in the 70s, whereas Jones, I do feel is at minimum has the upside, the film as well, but also the upside.
Yep. All right. I don't know if there's a character concern there or what.
Yeah, Kevin's asking, so like, what's wrong with him?
What's wrong with him? I have no idea. Dane Brugler has him at like cornerback 18. I don't get it. He's pretty low on PFF, so I don't know. This is a confusing one.
Yeah, I don't get that one. But there's always someone every year. What was Puka Nacua, you know? Oh, that's a very different reason.
Yeah, injuries and all that. Okay, so you mentioned Blake Fisher earlier. We were talking before we started recording about how good this offensive tackle class is. I think you have five or six guys, depending how you feel about like Troy Fautanu playing tackle full-time or guard, same with Talise Fuanga. There's like six or seven top guys, and then there's like four or five really quality developmental options. And to me, Blake Fisher is the best of that bunch. So if you want to sort into kind of like three tiers, I think he's the best of that third tier option. He's 90th on the consensus board. I have him at 47th. So why he's a my guy is really just the uniqueness of the athlete that he is. I know he's not like Joe Alt is like 99th percentile athlete, but you know, Blake Fisher, I think his explosiveness does show up in terms of the short area things. He'll jump out of his stance. He's actually usually quicker off the ball than Joe Alt is. Some of that is that Joe Alt is 6'9", but this is a guy, Blake Fisher, that I think really shows up in his ability to get out of his stance fast. He's able to cut off, backside reach blocks and get out wide on cutoff blocks. So I love his versatility with his ability to get out of his stance quickly. And then his core strength, his ability to anchor really surprised me because he is kind of like the lesser Notre Dame tackle. But he was able to have some reps against like Xavier Thomas from Clemson, as well as I forget his first name, but Sawyer. I think it's Jack Sawyer from Ohio State, where he would lose initially. And then he was able to replace and anchor down and do like the Rashawn Slater thing where you're just like holding him back and you're like totally, you know, neck backwards kind of deal. So the core strength, ability to anchor, I don't really have any concerns there. The concern is that he can kind of get beat, you know, from a speed translation or from a speed standpoint. If you're able to beat him out around the corner, I think that is kind of a weakness of his. But his feet really show up in his ability to handle counters as well, and just be able to redirect constantly as well. So I love his ability as a pass protector. I think his run blocking can be a little overzealous at times, but he is able to cut guys off really at a high level. He's able to reach to the second level. I think he's still, you know, growing into his body. I actually saw on the Beast that he lost 20 pounds between last season and this past season. So he's obviously cares about his body a lot. He's able to get in the gym and be conscious of that. So he's a guy who checks a lot of boxes for me. Also, he actually was the starting left tackle before Joe Alt was. He beat Joe Alt in their fall camp, and then he got injured, and that's what led to Joe Alt being the left tackle. So he was a higher graded recruit than Joe Alt was. And then fun fact, just like run blocking grade wise, he is right behind Olu, like 0.5 points off of Olu Fashanu. So this is a profile I really, really like. I think the Chargers are going to take an offensive tackle earlier than they would take him. But if they want, like, to me, what makes more sense is to get a guy behind Trey Pipkins. And I think Blake Fisher would be my choice there.
I know. I was watching him going, oh, man. Look, is Joe Alt better? Sure. And he's a left tackle. Yeah. And athletic upside, all that is there. I'm like, man, Joe Alt at 5 or Fisher and develop. Let's say the third round, right? To be safe, third round. He's projected, his consensus board is 87th. So sure, third round pick. Like, I'd get it. I think he's definitely worth it. I'm glad you put his name on here because I wouldn't have watched him before the show. And I did. But I'd also looked at his RAS before jumping on and watching him and thought, okay, like average athlete, fine. Yeah. But I'm 3 plays into the Ohio State game and there's a screen that gets batted down. He's got to jump out and get in front of that screen. And he's like a light. Like, he's out way over there, just way out in front of everybody. Unfortunately, the ball was batted down. But I'm like, whoa, where'd that come from? He's what? Like, he's a badass? He's an average athlete? Are you sure? And then watching it consistently, climbing or getting out in front of screens or pulling or whatever, this is a way better athlete. As you mentioned, the anchor is there. And I disagree, which is to sound blasphemous. I disagree with Brandon Thorne's assessment about him not being very good and not having a general like sense of counters and like what to do.
Because yeah, I actually thought that was a strength of his.
Yeah, that's what I thought. And I was watching the game against Duke, and Duke, Ohio State, Clemson. Those are the 3 games that I watched. He was benched against Louisville, apparently. But I watched, and especially the Duke game, guys would try to – Duke, for whatever reason, spins back inside a lot. I don't know if that's just what they always do or what. That's how they're taught. But they would always try to spin back inside against him, and he was always so patient and ready to go against those. Or they would try to rush and speed rush outside. They couldn't get there. They couldn't turn the corner. So they try to come back inside and ditch the rush. And he was always there, so patient, ready to go. Like you mentioned, the anchor. So I was surprised to see some of the concerns and the fourth round grade from him, from Thorne. But I'm not watching it with his eyes, so I can't say I could
speak. Yeah, and he has access to every game.
Yes. So, but in the 3 games that I did watch, I thought, like, this guy's a lot better. Jacob's asking about Rosengarten. To me, I do like Rosengarten and Foster and Jones. Even if you look at the consensus board, it kind of matches up, because I do feel after Fisher, like Paul Fisher, probably those two, I think there is a bit of a drop off to someone like Rosengarten and someone like Foster and someone like Jones, who I like, but those guys do feel like the round 3, 4, 5 kind of guys. Whereas Fisher, I really, holy cow, Brian. Brian just had a very nice $100 super chat, which we'll get to. Rosengarten, I really like, but I think he's very athletic, but doesn't have that same kind of anchor and the kind of inventory that Fisher has as a protector.
Yeah, Rosengarten's kind of like a Max Mitchell type to me, where he's probably like a starter in a pinch, and that's like his best case scenario. So to me, like, I'm not opposed to the Chargers taking that kind of profile, right? Because they do need that. There is value in that. But, you know, if you miss out on the top guys, I think you're trying to take a swing on somebody who could become that franchise guy. And so to me, there's like Fisher, there's Patrick Paul. I would put Tyler Guyton in that range. I think Tyler Guyton is massively overhyped for what he is right now. Those 3, I think, are like your guys who are potentially franchise right tackles. And to me, Blake Fisher would be my choice of that group.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Is Guyton in that group?
He is for me.
I would get why. I'll still go Guyton over him, but I would understand why. And Suamatea is just like an absolute freak. So I think I'd still go with
what
he can do. But Fisher's tape he's the steadiest of the two, I think. So maybe if you're Stoutland and you want to go with the ceiling guys, hey, have at it. But you want someone who's just consistent? Maybe a lower ceiling. I love Fisher.
Yeah, I know Suamatea is a freak athlete. He was actually like a world-class boxer, if I remember correctly.
No kidding.
When he was in middle school. So you can imagine that guy being a boxer across from you. That'd be freaking crazy. But I'm not watching BYU tape. I almost considered it, but for him, but yeah, not happening.
It's not as good as you hoped it'd be for someone so high. I guess we could pause the show for just a second because $100 super chats. We'll pause the show. If Marvin Harrison from Brian, thank you, by the way, if Marvin Harrison Jr. is at 5, what is the percentage chance you think that they pick him instead of trading out or pick an offensive tackle? If it's Neighbors or Odunze and Marvin Harrison Jr. is gone, same question.
Percentage chance points if Marvin Harrison Jr. is on the board at 5.
I think there's like a 3% chance they trade out. Otherwise, I think they're taking Marvin Harrison Jr.
I don't know, man. I've had this feeling that they're going to try and trade out no matter what happens in front of them.
You're set with Marvin Harrison. If that happens, don't do that with Marvin. I don't think you can do that with Marvin. I think that would be... You trade away Keenan Allen and trade out of Marvin Harrison Jr., you're going to lose his fan base real quick. I don't think they would. I don't think they can. Unless something comes up where there's a medical or a carrot or something that we all find out later on. But I don't see it.
If Marvin Harrison Jr. is on the board, I'm not going to say that it's like I'm going to predict it, but I just have this like feeling in the back of my head that they're just going to try and trade out regardless. So I would say I'll put it at 15%.
Okay. Yeah. Small, but much bigger chance than I would think. I think they field calls and that's about it. Now with Neighbors and Odunze, that's where I'm thinking like 30 to 40% chance. I think they trade out of that one. And I specifically think Neighbors is the one they would stick for. But yeah, I think there's, I wouldn't say 50-50. I'll say like 40% chance they trade out.
Yeah, because if Marvin Harrison Jr. is not on the board, that means obviously he went at 4 and the fourth quarterback would be on the board. So in the scenario where the fourth quarterback is on the board, I think that is 50-50 that they trade out, because I think that the Giants are doing all the homework on the quarterback class. And so if a team wants that fourth quarterback, they have to get ahead of the New York Giants. So there was a thing today from Adam Schefter that said that he thinks McCarthy goes in like the 7 to 9 range. I just can't see the Giants passing on him, you know, like they've had him in for a couple of visits. They've had Drake May in for visits. Maybe if Drake May is kind of the odd man out, maybe that changes things. I don't think it should, because to me, May should be the second quarterback taken. But if Marvin Harrison Jr. goes 4th, I think with the Chargers are basically like a coin flip from trading back, because I think they would be able to get a haul for a quarterback.
Yeah. Listen, you get 3 first rounders, you know, technically 2, but you get 3 first rounders for Neighbors or Odunze, whatever you would have picked. I got to celebrate that. Sorry. Like, I don't think Malik Neighbors or Rome Odunze are better than 2 additional first round picks in separate drafts. I also got to pause the show for one more thing from Sholo Man. Any thoughts on offensive tackle Giovanni Manu, the guy from British Columbia? Sholo Man, I do not have any thoughts on offensive tackle Giovanni Manu, the guy from British Columbia, but God bless you for asking that question. That is what I'm talking about. That's a great question. I just don't have an answer.
Maybe down the road when we have like actual access to film, we'll get to Canada prospects. But for now, like, we're struggling to get even some of these guys from Power 5 schools. So
yeah.
Shout out to Sholo Man though. Appreciate him. Good question. Love interacting with him on Twitter as well. Second super chat from Brian. No question, just more appreciation for what you guys do. Really appreciate it. Brian, I think I know which Brian you are. But if you want to drop the last name in the chat, feel free and do that. But whoever you are, Brian, we really appreciate it.
Don't care who you are. Don't care what your last name is. I appreciate it. And hey, if we're making your drive better, awesome. I totally get it. I don't listen to music as much on drives. I love the podcast stuff on drives. So
I only podcast. I never listen to music. So I listen to like 4 or 5 other podcasts and appreciate them. So appreciate all of you guys who do the same for us.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
All right, so next up, my guy, Ray Davis, the running back from Kentucky, who I watched and went, yep, that's a top five running back for me. No questions asked. I can get a bit, I'm very safe with my projections overall until about running back. Then I'm like, eh, Rashad White, RB1A. which, hey, you know, he had like 1,800 total yards.
He looked good last year for sure. Yeah,
not the worst call I've ever made, but there's just some running backs I go, that's the guy. And Ray Davis for me was that guy. I have him behind Jalen right now, so he is RB5. But I love watching him. Awesome pass game reps. And there's a difference. You look at the numbers, look at the receiving stats, you look at yards per route run, whatever it is. And you go watch the film and it's, you know, swing route, dump off, screen. Ray Davis, you know, he's running fades. He's running cross, like any of the angle routes for touchdowns. He's got a screen where he's carrying, you know, three guys into the end zone for a touchdown. Like his receiving work is awesome. And he's a very balanced player. That was evident on film. And I just looked at our stats today, and he's one of just six players, or six running backs, I should say. So it's him, Bucky Irving, Estime, Wright, Benson, and Brooks. One of only six guys who are top 10 in yards per attempt after contact and yards per route run. Some guys are maybe good in two, but not the third. He's balanced where he's top 10 in all three out of 30-something. And that definitely shows on film. And then just, you love him already, great. And then the article comes out, I think the day before or after I watched him, about his story. Go ahead and read it. Like, I won't really spoil it as much, but he went through a lot to get to where he is today. You can't help but read that article and go, draft him. Like, I don't really care where, to a certain extent.
Yeah,
that kind of guy with that kind of film and that character and that heart to get through and overcome. And what I think was so impressive is that, you know, you read the article and it's not like this guy who was like desperate for resources or attention or anything. He just wanted to grind through and get it done himself. He wasn't out there asking to be helped really in a certain situation. And he just kept fighting and getting through it. And he did. And now he's going to be drafted in this class. And I'm rooting for him wherever he goes.
Yeah, he's an easy guy to like. I think, you know, I watched him after you did. And we didn't talk about him beforehand. But, like, I would read about his profile. And it's like, oh, like, he's got a ton of carries. He's sure. Not super fast. There's not a lot of pass catching there. And I'm like, oh, okay. Like, maybe I'll like him a little bit. And then, like, the eighth or ninth play against Georgia, the guy ran a seam route from the backfield and then caught a contested catch in the corner of the end zone. And I was like, what the shit? Like, why is this guy not being talked about more? It just caught me way off guard. So I think his film is so much fun to watch. The contact balance, the vision are outstanding. Of course, there's, you know, the story is fantastic as well. So you love the person, you love the film. You know, of course, you know, some people could be concerned about the age and the amount of carries, but you know, at running back, I think is if you're checking those other boxes, I think it doesn't really matter as much. And Ray Davis, I think, is built to be a RB2 for a team, and I think he'd be very effective in that role.
Yeah, I agree. I had a ton of fun watching him. Brian, I'm seeing you in the chat. Stop drinking, buddy. I appreciate the super chats, but no more drinking. This is our PSA.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, if drinking leads to more super chats.
I'll shout out anyone's hometown for a super chat. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. Gabriel, hey, guys, just wanted to ask if you guys can shout out my hometown, the Inland Empire, SoCal. I've actually never been there, but I know some really good people from Die Hard Bolt Club in there that are from Inland Empire. So definitely can get a shout out to Inland Empire. Appreciate all you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. Die Hard Bolt Club, Inland Empire, absolutely. I coached a bunch of dancers and athletes from there who would drive over to me. So great kids, great families. Absolutely.
Yeah. We can get to some of the other ones later. No, I think there's like a question. Okay, we're going back to back running backs here. You mentioned him briefly. Jalen Wright is this one for me. Consensus board is 80th for Jalen Wright. I am at 51st. To me, he's the definition of juice at the position, and this is exactly the kind of profile.
What
that...
timing to say juice on this podcast? What timing?
Right. To me, he's the exact kind of profile that you want alongside Gus Edwards. You look at if you just looked at his stats and his speed and his athletic profile, you'd probably think this guy is like a Devon Achain guy that's like 5'8", you know, 185 pounds. Nah, man, this is a 6 foot, 210 pound running back that led FBS in the amount of carries that went for 10 yards, led the country in yards per carry as well. 25% of his carries in 2023 went for 10 plus yards. I saw that and that blew my mind, and it totally checks out on tape. And it's not just like he's doing this on like toss plays or like gimme runs that are going to the outside. This is a decisive downhill runner that can make somebody miss in the hole and then pop a run for 15, 16 yards at any moment. He also had the most runs of 50 plus yards in the country. I think he had 4 of them last year. Mm-hmm. So this is a guy that is a home run hit waiting to happen. And it they're like legitimate, like he is creating them. That's why you like him. So, you know, I know Alex Insdorf really liked Jerome Ford. Jerome Ford like had this same kind of profile, but all of Jerome Ford's big runs were like gimmies. Like they were just like, oh, like yeah. The hole is wide open and he just happens to run faster than everybody else. Pierre Strong is another type. His big runs are created by Jalen Wright himself. So I love watching his tape. The numbers are outstanding. The more I watch this running back class, he's RB3 for me now, right? Yep. Behind Jonathan Brooks and Trey Benson. And when you are comparing the rest of this class, it's a lot of guys with injury concerns. It's a lot of older guys. This guy, Jalen Wright, has never been injured. He's 21 years old. He'll play his entire rookie season at age 21. So there's not a lot of touches here. There's not a lot of baggage here. This is essentially a clean and explosive slate for any team to draft, and I would be thrilled if the Chargers took him.
Yeah, he's obviously risen up quite a bit. I watched him before the combine.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, this guy's hit another 40-yard run. Okay, here's another 40-yard run. And it's like, and they're all like up the middle. They're like you said, there's not like there's this nice toss and it's wide open, then he just goes. It's like, okay, I'm gonna get it up the middle. Well, he runs it up the middle and takes off. And I can't believe the stat of 25% of his carries 10 yards or more. But that's true on tape. That's kind of like Isaiah Davis, except for Jalen Wright can also hit the home run, which Davis didn't hit as much. So outstanding profile. The RAS is great. The stats are wonderful. The film was wonderful. I think we had him as one of the safest players in the draft. I could be wrong. But if we didn't, then we should, because he definitely is one of those safest players. Maybe not the best like all around back. That's why Benson and Brooks are higher, I think, for both of us.
Yeah.
But as a pure runner, you want someone who will change the game. Go take him.
Yeah. And I do think his pass catching ability can improve. But hey man, you throw him a couple screens a game and see if he can pop one. Like that's absolutely in the realm of possibilities for him. So
yeah.
Love his tape. I think the athletic profile, lack of concerns, might push him up higher than like people are talking about right now. But if the Chargers are sitting there at 69 and they took Jalen Wright, I would totally get it.
Yeah, I agree. And there's talk of like, not talk, but like Isaac Garendo, everyone's like, oh my gosh, this guy in his RAS. I think they're very two different running backs, and even on field, like it just looks different. Garendo's got the higher RAS. Wright looks far more the part on film. Like it matched his combine testing.
Completely agree.
Yeah. Next one up for me is Nelson Caesar, the edge rusher from Houston, who I like quite a bit. I talked about him as a Harbaugh guy. He's definitely a my guy. If you're watching these guys on day three, you're looking for anything, any kind of pass rush plan. If you can dip and rip, great. Like, thank God we found someone on day three who can at least do that. But I saw that from him, and I saw a long arm, and I saw a cross chop, and I saw power. I'm just thinking, I just do not get why he's so far down on the consensus board at 153. There are some other guys. I don't remember where Cedric Johnson is or Booker are, but I think he's better than those guys, and I think he's more productive. I mean, 81 pressures, 14 sacks, 54 stops the last two seasons together. Is better than someone like Booker, who has basically just the one season with, I believe, less production on a per play basis. So motor's awesome. The skill set is there. I had a ton of fun watching him. He beat up Rice. That was a lot of fun to watch. Nelson Caesar, I think, is one of my favorite players for sure.
Yeah, I have not watched him, but he is on my list. So I watched Cedric Johnson the other day, and I watched Jalen Harrell from Michigan. Oh, so Nelson Caesar will be up next for me for the edge rushers.
Nice.
So this is an edge rusher that you have not watched?
Not yet. I only got
Okay, so Gabriel Murphy, this is a player that I loved watching during the season. I loved watching on tape. He is 107th on the consensus ranking. Big board for me is 85th. So there are some like physical profile concerns. He does have pretty short arms. He is kind of smaller. But I think he makes up for it in a variety of ways. So he's consistently disruptive. He's fifth in our composite rankings for edge rushers. He's 10th in pass rush win rate and 7th in run stop percentage. And to me, he was dependable against the run. It's not like he was just, you know, quick off the ball and he would be able to, knife through and just like be faster than everybody. Like that does show up, but he is able to set the edge. He is able to hold up and handle power from opposing offensive tackles. He would occasionally kick inside. So if you're not familiar with UCLA, they obviously have Leiatu Latu, and then Gabriel Murphy's brother, Grayson, as well, who does show up pretty well statistically. But Gabriel was the one who would kick inside more often than the other two. And I think that just kind of speaks to his ability and willingness to do the dirty work. And so he's a guy, just character-wise, I think teams are going to be very interested in. Tested completely off the charts. The one thing about RES that I wish they would factor in is like arm length and things like that.
I agree.
So if you take out the size, like Gabriel Murphy is a special, special athlete. A lot of people have compared him to like Hassan Reddick, and I think that checks out just based off of like physical profiles. Hassan Reddick is a guy that we really wanted on the Chargers for several years in free agency. So I think it's a profile that works. It's probably a guy who does have to play off the ball a little bit, maybe is kind of a designated pass rusher in the NFL, but the motor is outstanding. The constant playmaking ability in the backfield is outstanding. You can tell that he works on his craft. So he's not able to do the same things that Leiatu Latu can do, because Latu is a better, more physical defender overall, has the arm length. But Gabriel Murphy can cross chop, he can dip and rip. And so you can tell that he's worked on things with Latu and his brother. And then the last thing that I really liked from his story on The Beast is that he had the opportunity to go play at bigger schools as a recruit, but he wanted to play with his brother, and his brother was very under recruited. And so they chose North Texas so they could play together. He could have easily left his brother behind and went and did his own thing, but he was committed to playing with his brother, Grayson, making sure that they could stick together and finish their careers out in the fashion that they came in, obviously, as twins. So I think that speaks a lot to just who he is as a person and being willing to kind of take less, so to speak, to play with his brother more often and still shine, still won his way out and made it to UCLA. So it's just a really cool story to me to wrap up a film watching experience that was really fun to watch.
I didn't know that about him. And obviously I knew that he had a brother. I didn't realize that particular part of the story. That definitely means a lot to have that kind of connection. Maybe he won't be with his brother in the NFL, having that kind of connection with your teammates, and you know, when things are tough, you know, who do you rely on and can you stick together? Stuff like that really stands out. I can't wait to watch him. It's fun. It's nice to have an edge rusher that I have to watch that had 61 pressures in college football last year, which means like it'll be fun to watch him. I'll actually get some good production, which is really good because sometimes you don't get that.
Yeah. Excited that Washington to that Washington State tape is pretty ridiculous. So it's, okay. He's a fun profile.
Okay. Last one for me is Malik Mustafa, the safety from Wake Forest, consensus board ranking 140th, my big board ranking 72nd. I think he's still Nate Tice's safety one, which is still crazy to me. I do like Cole Bishop more. I think Cole Bishop is better all around, but I get why someone would at least like Malik Mustafa quite a bit, because I do. He's a my guy. He's a twitched up, like twitchy, fired up football player. Hit the way that my favorite safeties play football, and Cole Bishop reminds me of this too. It's like the kind of like coked up grasshopper from A Bug's Life, where he's just kind of like, they have to put him on a leash and he's just kind of like, he just really wants to like go kill the ants. Nice. And that, like these like really twitchy kind of bouncy guys are like, I just want to go hit something. And that's Mustafa, that's Bishop. These guys are just waiting in coverage, like make a mistake. I'm going to pick it off. And they go do it. That's definitely him. He's also, oh, by the way, like number one in our stat rankings, and number two in run stop rate, number one in missed tackle rate versus the run. So very solid player statistically, very good film, great in coverage, great against the run, total enforcer. It's nice to see someone who can play really far back and knock down a deep pass and cover the post very well, and then also go up and hit someone in the run game. A ball of fun to watch. Not my safety one, but I do like him quite a bit.
Yeah, that's totally fair, man. Totally fair. I have not gotten to him yet, but he is also on my list. So I'm excited to watch. Yeah, Nate Tice loves him. So a lot of stuff with Nate Tice I really like, but he also had like Jared Wiley as his tight end three, and I was like, huh? Yeah.
Okay, I have not watched him, so I guess I can't judge that take just yet. But you know what? In this tight end class, I think you put Bowers first thing. And then have at it from there.
Yep.
This list used to be about 45 minutes long on my side.
Yeah. These are the honorable mentions or the usual suspects. These are guys who we've talked a lot about. Maybe some of them not as much, but for me, we've talked about him a little bit. Obviously, Utah guy, Cole Bishop, Notre Dame cornerback, Cam Hart. I was reading Daniel Popper's his mock draft recently from yesterday or today. I can't remember. Today's blending together. And in there, he talked about a quote from Jesse Minter where like size and speed at corner is like extremely valuable to them. Cam Hart is definitely that, and then some. Hunter Norzad, who I've talked a lot about. Ricky Pearsall, who is right behind Jalen Polk and A.D. Mitchell in my wide receiver rankings. Pearsall actually has the third highest separation rate, according to Sumer Sports, of this class. So he's a guy who consistently gets open, and I really like that. And you know, he has arrogant hands, as I would like to call them. Kansas edge rusher Austin Booker. Really surprised by his run defense, considering he's like a designated pass rusher profile. And then Oregon defensive lineman Brandon Dorlus is one of my favorite players to watch. Just a ton of disruption from the defensive line perspective. A little bit undersized in comparison to potentially what the Chargers are looking for. Like, I think he weighed in at like 275 at the senior bowl. Excuse me. Love his tape though. Ton of fun to watch. Athletic profile is pretty good as well. So. Those are my honorable mentions and usual suspects.
Yeah, a couple of honorable mentions that you've heard of before. We literally just talked about some of these. Ohio State defensive tackle Michael Hall, South Carolina wide receiver Xavier Leggett, Utah edge rusher Jonah Ellis, who I freaking loved watching, Oregon corner Kyrie Jackson, Arizona tight end Tanner McLaughlin, and Cincinnati interior defensive lineman Juwan Briggs, the guy who I think set the combine record, at least for this year, in bench press reps. And he's also an avid singer. He'll sing you Ave Maria and then dump you in the field. he's a ton of fun to watch. All these guys, ton of fun to watch. Ricky Pierce, I want to get to him real quick. Not sure there's many receivers let down as bad by their quarterback as Pearsall, who I think had a good 300 other yards he should have had.
Yeah.
And they just couldn't find him, or he'd get open and they dump it in his feet. So Pearsall's situation did not help him. I feel the same way with Worthy. And then I think McCaffrey and the offense that they ran, which they had him running wildcat plays into Texas's interior defensive line.
So I got to watch McCaffrey versus Tavondre Sweat, and believe it or not, Tavondre Sweat won that one. So that's got to take the gold medal. But Pearsall's offense was not great.
No, it was bad. The Utah game is probably one of my favorite tapes of his, and there's like four or five times where he Utah has a cornerback he'll be in next year's draft class. His name is Zamaya Vaughn. He is a long, fast, physical cornerback, and Pearsall cooked him off the line a couple of times, would be open for what should have been like a 35, 40 yard gain. And then Graham Mertz or whatever his name is would underthrow him. If Sholoman is in here, he's a Florida fan. He can vouch for that. Mm-hmm. The quarterback situation at Florida was not fun to watch. And Ricky Pearsall, in a better circumstance, I think is getting more hype. And then he went out and tested like a freak. The guy was like a 4.41, 40 inch vert, like crazy physical profile that I expected him to test well, but not that well. So he's a guy I think could be a surprise on draft night. Although he is kind of shooting up draft boards right now. I think I saw earlier he was on like in the 50s on the consensus board.
Ooh, yeah, 47th.
47. I think it was close. So yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 receivers before the 48th on the consensus ranking. It's a nuts class.
That's crazy. So where did you, he's in your top 10
at for wide receivers? You're talking about Pearsall?
Yeah.
I will double check where he is right now. I don't have it listed as like wide receiver 1 through 10. So let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
He's 10.
11.
11. 12, okay.
14th.
14th. Okay. All right.
Respectfully. 14th. Respectfully.
Yeah.
But I think his offense didn't do many favors. He's probably better than him. I still have a second round grade on him, though.
You have 14 receivers or
yes,
more with second round grades?
Yes.
Whew.
Yes. Amazing. Well, sorry. First or second, but yes. Mm-hmm. I'm too nice.
Yeah. Man. Here we are an hour and 3 minutes later, as always. Gotta love it. Real quick from Luis. He wants to know, cornerback Patrick Surtain from Broncos for 5 and more? Are the Broncos considering trading Patrick Surtain? Have I missed something?
That's a tough one for me because there's an aspect of like cost control, right? But 5th overall is hefty. Yeah, people have traded for corners, obviously, but that 5th overall pick, I'm curious.
I mean, because you're going to have to pay him, and L'Jarius Sneed just went for a future 3rd-round pick. So if the Broncos are trying to trade Surtain to get up, I still think you're talking about like a cornerback, obviously 12, maybe still next year's first because it's for a quarterback.
Oh, so, if that's what we're talking about, then that's a whole different conversation. I see.
Yeah. It wouldn't just be quarterback and 12, or it wouldn't just be Surtain and 12 for 5. I think it would have to be like more than that.
I don't know.
Maybe not next year's first, but maybe you get like next year's 3rd or something like that.
Sure.
But
send us Joe Lombardi.
Yeah, there's some other ones in here from Brian. I don't know if we want to put them on here, but Brian, we appreciate it, man. Lots of super chats from him today.
Yes, you know, I'll just fly through them. Don't drink and drive. You all look amazing today. Smile. Jeez, thank you. 69th, nice. Juicy, solid, thick. Some scouting reports. Sounds like thirsty dudes on Instagram models comments. Hey, man, if you're paying us a super chat, I'll say it. Sure. Yeah, thick, soft. The more when I type some of these scouting reports, I have to like delete sometimes, like, oh gosh, like I can just hear, even as like a teacher trying to filter what I say.
Yeah,
you know, it's tough. Awesome. Football question. Anyway, we trade out of our 2nd rounder instead of our 1st rounder. What are the chances we could do that? Very high, I think. 37 is awesome. So is 47, I think, in this draft. So is 27 for that matter, though. Different when you're trading up for a quarterback, but the Ravens obviously did trade up for Lamar Jackson. There's some precedent there, but they'll do whatever they got to do. That's for sure. I think if they don't trade back in the 1st round, I think they're happy to do it in the 2nd round.
Yeah, I think if the Chargers stick and pick at 5, I would be shocked if they did not trade down from the second round pick. So we see this every single year that there's all these guys who like should go in the first round that don't, and then teams try and trade up for them. The Raiders traded up for Michael Mayer last year. The Lions traded up for Brian Branch. Like, it just, it happens. The Titans traded up for Will Levis. The Packers traded up for Christian Watson. So, you know, I could go on and on there. There's, it's just, you know, the Chargers sitting at 5 in the second round and 5 in the fourth round too. It just gives them so many options to trade down and collect some assets. So I was looking at like a recent draft trade history, and the Colts actually traded down twice in the second round and essentially turned pick 35 into like 6 players, because then they traded down again in like fourth round. The only two players of note are right now are Juju Brents and Adetemiwa Adebuare from that trade. But hey, man, like that's still a great outcome if you can just get two guys like that. So trading pick 37 is definitely on the table, and I think it would give the Chargers a lot of flexibility in the draft.
I agree.
All righty. Hour and 7 minutes. There we go. hopefully you guys enjoyed that one. You know, we've been getting a lot of positive feedback from you about the way we've covered this draft. So hopefully this is another one there. I tried to mix it up as much as I could. We talked about Terry Arnold before, but
yeah,
wanted to try and cover some different names in this setting.
Oh, I'm up. Steven has 13 receivers with the second round or greater better, and he hasn't graded Malik Washington yet. So, you know, he's going to tie me in a bit.
Yeah, you like Malik Washington. I think the Boulay guys like him a lot too.
Yeah, so hey, if I got 14, you have 13 going on 14. So
that's true. All right, appreciate you guys for tuning in live tonight. For those that are watching this on replay or listening, we appreciate you as well. Make sure and leave us a comment, a like, a subscribe. All that stuff really does help continue to grow the show. That's going to do it for us today. We'll see you guys live on Saturday morning. We'll see you then. As always, bolt up.